Thou shalt not display the Ten Commandments on public property? Well, today the U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments in two cases that test whether the Ten Commandment monuments on government property violate the First Amendment. Opponents of the displays argue that they amount to government-sponsored promotion of religion, a violation of the principle of church and state, but those in favor say the Ten Commandments are part of our national heritage and deserve to be viewed by the public. Joining us now to talk about this case and other Supreme Court news is David Savage, legal correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, with us by phone from his office here in Washington. Always nice to have you on the program, David.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Tell us a little bit more about these two cases, Texas and Kentucky.
Well, Texas, since 1961, has had a granite monument that sits right outside the state capitol. It's about 6 foot tall, and it has the Ten Commandments on it. It was given to the state by the Fraternal Order of Eagles, dedicated to the youth of Texas. And I should say there are some other monuments on the Texas Capitol grounds to war veterans and that sort of thing. In Kentucky, it's a little bit different. There are two or three counties in eastern Kentucky where the judges decided to display the Ten Commandments inside the courtrooms and on the walls of the courthouse. When they were sued, they then added a series of other documents like the Declaration of Independence and the Star-Spangled Banner and whatnot. So now there's a display of 9 or 10 documents, one of which is the Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in saying that this was unconstitutional said adding those other documents was just a sham.
Yes, that's right. I mean, they did it after they were sued, and they even managed to screw up what they did. They put up the Star-Spangled Banner and said that it inspired patriots during the Revolutionary War. But, you know, the Star-Spangled Banner was written after the War of 1812, 30 years later.
At the court this morning, these cases were argued, of course, in the Supreme Court chamber itself. There's a portrayal of Moses holding the Ten Commandments.
Yes, that's right. And the attorneys challenging the Ten Commandments in Texas and in Kentucky were quick to say, what you have here in the Supreme Court is okay. You needn't worry about Moses up there along the ceiling. They made the point that, there's a display of 20 so-called lawgivers, one of which is Moses carrying a tablet, and, of course, you can't see it. And this is a classic sort of line-drawing case, and it's a real hard line to draw. You know, in other words, nobody would say that if you found some courthouse somewhere that had a big mural with many figures, one of whom was Moses, and you say, oh, well, he's the guy who gave us the Ten Commandments, that mural has to come down. On the other hand, if that same city or county put up a Christian cross up on the city hall and said, this is a Christian county, almost everybody would agree, no, that display is an establishment of religion. So the hard part here is to say, when is a display so prominent that the average person would look at it and say, well, this really is the government endorsing or promoting religion.
Mm-hmm. And in their questions to the various lawyers as they heard these arguments this morning, did the justices give any indication that they were eager to find a clear line? One thing's okay, one thing isn't.
I don't think there will be a clear line. There are several justices who have clear views. Justice Scalia said, what's the big deal? God is the source of our laws. Why can't you put up the Ten Commandments and basically say that? There are four other liberal justices who believe in a separation of church and state, and they're inclined to say you can't have these monuments. But the key vote is likely to be Justice O'Connor, and she's not one for writing an all-or-nothing opinion. I wouldn't be surprised, for example, if she would say the Texas monument is okay because there are a whole lot of other monuments around there, and it's been up for 40-some years. And the Kentucky thing is not okay because these judges were putting these Ten Commandments up clearly intending to give a religious message. They did it in the last couple of years, and then they sort of tried to fuzz it up and cover it up.
Mm-hmm. All of this in the context of, I guess it was just last year, Judge Roy Moore, the Chief Justice in Alabama, elected, put up a big, you know, a granite display of the Ten Commandments there on the in the courthouse and lost his job for refusing to enforce a federal court order to have it removed.
Yes. Judge Roy Moore's example, I think, was in everybody's mind, and it was mentioned several times. You could say he was there in spirit today, even if it wasn't his case. And I think even the government lawyers defending the Ten Commandments in these cases were inclined to say that if the government does that or a judge does that, that is, puts a monument, a religious monument or a religious display right in the middle of the courthouse so that everyone has to look at it and see it, that probably goes too far.
Mm-hmm. One of the issues that came up in the Roy Moore case, the Judge Moore case, was that the it depends a lot. There are different versions of the Ten Commandments. Each religion, various kinds of Christian religions, have their own versions of the Ten Commandments. And by putting out one version of it, you seem to be endorsing one particular religion. Did that come up today?
Yes, Justice John Paul Stevens made exactly that point. He said there are at least three versions, the Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish, and one of the attorneys says there are probably five.
Yeah.
And he made exactly that point. Yes, you've chosen the Protestant version. Doesn't that seem to get the government involved in sort of taking sides in a religious dispute?
The court, church and state comes up all the time, but it's been a quarter century since they directly addressed this issue of the Ten Commandments.
Yes, really the only decision the Supreme Court's had directly on the Ten Commandments was in 1980. They struck down a law in, I believe, Indiana that said every classroom had to have a Ten Commandments on the wall of the classroom. The court struck that down in a 5-4 vote and said the Ten Commandments are undeniably religious and that the state legislature did it for a religious purpose. The court's much more, it was divided then, but it's even moved a little bit since then, I think more accepting, more accommodating of religion. So it's very much, I think, up in the air as to how they will decide these two cases.
Last year, there was a lot of anticipation when a challenge to the Pledge of Allegiance, the words "under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance, came to the Supreme Court, and they ducked the issue. They said the guy who filed the suit did not have standing to so file the suit, and they punted, basically. Is there suspicion they may do the same in the Ten Commandments case?
I don't think so. I don't think they have an out this time. They could dodge it last time by saying this fellow didn't have custody, and they took that option. The court was sort of split 4-4 because Justice Scalia wasn't in the case, and as you say, they punted. I think they'll decide this case. I think it's also possible, though, that Justice O'Connor might write an opinion that doesn't really decide all the issues. You know, she's going to say some things are okay, some things are not okay, and a lot of people are going to have questions, I think, after that. But, yes, they will decide. They will issue opinions in these cases.
Before we let you go, David, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about yesterday's Supreme Court decision on the juvenile death penalty. This was a decision where it was ruled that applying the death penalty to anyone who committed a crime under the age of 18 was cruel and unusual punishment. Justice Kennedy announced that opinion from the bench. He said it was proper to acknowledge the overwhelming weight of international opinion against the juvenile death penalty. Does the court often consider international opinion?
They have more so in the last couple years, and they've been careful to say, as Kennedy does, is that we might look at it, we might be influenced about it, but it's not the deciding. We don't decide the cases because of international opinion. But he did make a reasonably good point, which is the United States was the last country in the world that, as he said, officially sanctioned executing persons who were under 18 at the age of the crime. So that if you look around the world, he said, the United States stands alone, and we should take that into account. It doesn't decide the case for us, but it's something to pay attention to.
And that was the subject of a relatively rare oral dissent from the bench by Justice Scalia.
Well, Justice Scalia was bothered about many things about this decision. He doesn't think the Supreme Court should be drawing these lines. He thinks it was proper to allow states to decide what's a death penalty crime and let juries decide on a case-by-case basis. But he certainly doesn't think the United States Supreme Court should be, you know, he said, looking at the views of foreigners to decide the meaning of the U.S. Constitution.
Mm-hmm. The question, we all saw Justice Rehnquist, the Chief Justice, at the inauguration of a second inauguration for President Bush, and he looked fragile, speaking with a wheeze due to the tracheotomy that he's had for the treatment of his cancer. Again, what role has Justice Rehnquist played in these two cases?
Well, he's continued to be involved reading the briefs, deciding cases, and he's been going to some of the Supreme Court's closed-door arguments. He has a problem with this tracheotomy and I think does not want to sit in public. He needs a suction device, but I think he's still active in deciding the cases, just not appearing on the bench. I think the conventional view is that he will step down at the end of this term, but at least for the moment, he's continuing to do his job.
And the end of the term comes in the spring?
Yes, that's right. Their last arguments are in the end of April. Then in May and June, they basically hand down the decisions that have piled up over the years, over the term, and they usually adjourn the last week in June.
As listeners may remember, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Specter of Pennsylvania, said pretty much the same thing when he was on the program yesterday, that he expected Justice Rehnquist to step down at the end of the term. David Savage, as always, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
David Savage is legal correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, and he joined us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.